each year losing.
What does it feel like to be 96 and a legend, Miss Legend?
I'm amazed every single day I live.
When the time comes, what do you want us to remember about you?
I've done my best. That's all.
And
services.
Amid an ongoing battle between bullish day traders and hedge fund short sellers that have bet against the stock, GameStop shares have now risen some 700%.
On the crime front, the police of 9 western states from Washington in the north to Colorado and Utah in the east have been alerted to keep a continuous search for the Kansas desperado Emmett Myers. Reports have placed the killer in Florida, Detroit, and Seattle within the last 24 hours, although most of these tips have been discounted by police authorities. His latest victim, William Johnson, a salesman from Portland, Oregon, was found late yesterday in Imperial County, California. The victim's car, possibly with Myers in it, has not yet been found.
Welcome back to A Place for Film, the official IU Cinema podcast. I am your co-host, Elizabeth Brell, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, David Carter.
Hello, Elizabeth.
Hi, David.
How are you doing this week? How are you doing on this very normal week? This extremely normal one we're having. Very normal.
Personally, I am good.
Okay.
How are you?
That's good to hear. I'm doing good. I would like to remind everyone that it is still January.
Somehow.
And somehow in the first month we've had an insurrection, an inauguration.
I guess, actually it won't be January when
by the time
episode
this episode comes
out.
Okay. Well, at the time of this
happy
recording.
February.
Happy February. The biggest news this week is the GameStop thing. The quite literally the I have no words for it. I'm at this point, I'm sure you have heard people talk about it and fail to explain it to you, but the GameStop short squeeze is actually insane. It rules. This also applies to, it's also the AMC short squeeze, because they did the same thing to AMC. It's great. I love the fact that there are a bunch of people who got bored enough on Reddit to essentially be like, let's just exploit this completely broken system and both screw over a bunch of hedge funders and also unintentionally save like two companies, one of which it doesn't actually need to be saved. And the other one I'm very happy about that they might have unintentionally saved AMC Theaters. Crazy stuff, people.
I've listened to how like a million people try to describe it, and I like still am not quite sure why or how it works.
I mean, I have seen The Big Short enough times that which sounds silly, but I understand the concept of what it means to short a stock enough that I was be able to grasp it. I feel like I can never do a great job explaining it to people who have like zero concept of how the stock market works. I don't even know how the stock market actually works. I just have this like frame of reference for it. So yeah, if you out there listening to this actually got in on that before Robinhood, the app, stopped letting people buy stocks in either of those, you know, contact us. I'd like to hear about it. I don't know anyone personally who got in, but a lot of normal people just kind of got in on it because you were just able to buy stocks for so cheap on like Robinhood, the Robinhood app, which is a like app that allows you to buy and sell stocks from your phone.
But also just like still be careful though, people.
Yes, it is gambling, which it is the whole point of this Reddit thing, is that they're just exposing how much it's gambling, and that if it's truly a free market system, that we should, you know, anyone can do this. But obviously, in the time since this has happened, they're trying to rewrite the laws and put restrictions on who can have access to this stuff. So it's just been a wild, wild week. But we're not here to talk about the short squeeze on GameStop and AMC. We are here to talk about a movie that me and Elizabeth enjoy quite a bit, Ida Lupino's 1953 noir masterpiece, The Hitchhiker, which Elizabeth will talk about why, well, you'll get to in the schedule as to why we're talking about it this week. So, Elizabeth, take us to the schedule.
Coming up this week at IU Cinema, first, starting Wednesday, February 3rd and available until February 17th, we have the 1953 film The Hitchhiker, directed by Ida Lupino. It is inspired by the real-life murder spree of Billy Cook and follows Ray and Gilbert as their fishing trip takes a terrifying turn when the hitchhiker they pick up turns out to be a homicidal drifter on the run from the law. This important film is the only classic noir film directed by a woman and was screened at IU Cinema in the fall of 2018 for our 5x series, honoring Ida Lupino's work as a film director. This semester, The Hitchhiker is a part of our 10 Years, 10 Films, 10 Perspectives series, celebrating the 10th anniversary of IU Cinema. They are free to watch, but you can only get access by signing up for IU Cinema weekly emails, which you can do via the contact page on the IU Cinema website. Next, on Thursday, February 4th at 7 p.m., we are screening the film Dissolution. It's a 2010 experimental adaptation of the novel Crime and Punishment, directed by the independent feminist filmmaker Nina Menkes. This is a free event and will start with a live introduction. Then all of the attendees will be given access to watch the film, and we will return back to the event for a live Q&A with Nina Menkes herself. To watch the film, please note that you must tune in for the live event. That is the only time it will be available. Also that day, starting on the 4th, but continuing till February 11th, the film Queen of Diamonds will be available. That is a 1991 film produced, written, directed, and shot by Nina Menkes, starring her sister Tinka as the lead role. So Queen of Diamonds follows the alienated life of a blackjack dealer as she ponders the fate of a missing husband while her next-door neighbors deal in mutual abuse. This is a part of our Nina Menkes Cinematic Sorceress of the Self series. There is no specific live event for this film, but to get access to it for free, you must register for either the Dissolution Zoom event that I just mentioned or the Nina Menkes Jorgensen event on February 11th.
So, Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm.
We both, I think, became... Well, I knew who Ida Lupino was just basically just from being a big dork and just reading about film history all the time. But yeah, we did the 5x films with her at the IU Cinema last year. Two years ago.
Well, technically a year and a half, but like... I don't know what time is anymore.
I know.
I talked about it in the schedule. I wrote it down.
And it was great seeing, like, I think I went to pretty much all of those films. It was great actually getting to see the work by this woman who, if you don't know who Ida Lupino is an English actress, director, producer, founder of an independent film studio, who essentially got her start being discovered as a teenager and then performing in British theater and British film and then getting discovered and coming over to the American studio system sometime in the 30s, working for Paramount under contract. And she's pretty unique for her time in that she could both play like dressed down and innocent, but also play like, you know, sultry and sexy, which she, like a lot of actors and actresses, preferred to play bad people.
And it's more fun.
It's more fun, yeah. And she eventually, after like, you know, having success as an actress and like going to Warner Brothers and having like a set of like hit films there, like High Sierra and They Live by Night and a few others, and working with Nicholas Ray and other directors, she'd always kind of had this interest in being a director because she found acting kind of boring, like at a certain point. She even like kind of ghost directed a Nicholas Ray film after he fell ill during its production, and eventually after working with her ex-boyfriend Howard Hughes, which is a crazy part of her history.
I just listened to that on You Must Remember This.
Which is probably where my brain got that information from, because I just remember that popping into my head. But she used to date Howard Hughes when she was much younger. But that You Must Remember This episode by the great Karina Longworth. You should go check it out if you want more of a history of Ida Lupino. But yes, she became a director, and her whole thing was, especially after talking to a famous neo-realist director, Roberto Rossellini, decided that American pictures didn't have enough realism and social issues in them. And so if you were to say what her auteurist signature is that she's essentially making like social problem pictures within the American film studio, but like putting them within like kind of like salacious, exciting, fun movies. Like the Ida Lupino's movies aren't really presented as like an important movie for the ages. It's more like there's this thing in this movie that, you know, you will find interesting, like her movie The Bigamist, which is about a bigamist, a man married to two women at the exact same time, and like the social issues involved with that. One of her movies, I think it's called Outrage.
Yeah.
Is that the one that is like the famous movie that is, we weren't, I don't think we screened it. If we screened it, I unfortunately missed it. Is that the one that has to do with sexual assault, which is a big deal at the time when it had come out? And we could go through her whole filmography, but I think as far as what I have seen thus far, her crowning achievement, and I think by her own admission, I remember reading a while ago, her best film is this film called The Hitchhiker, which is a post-war noir film. It's the first movie, noir movie directed by a woman. It is about two men who have told their wives that they are going on a trip to one place, and in reality they're going down to Mexico to kind of get away from their wives and like get away from their work and just relax, and they unknowingly pick up a hitchhiker who has committed multiple murders during their trip.
What?
And it is 71 minutes of the tensest, meanest, leanest filmmaking I've seen from this time period, because my thing about noir films are generally is that they're a little confusing and disorienting on purpose. And this is very much like a point A to point B movie, and you have to sit in the discomfort of it. But yeah, before we get into like my thoughts on the film, like, what are your like did you see this at the cinema for the first time? How do you feel about Ida Lupino after seeing, you know, so many of her films in the past couple of years? I'm just kind of curious.
So I actually, my knowledge on like classic Hollywood is not as robust as some people's. So my intro to Ida Lupino was our 5x series. I did not know her. Once we had programmed it, I knew she was an actress turned director, but I did not know her as an actress. So I came into it being like, cool, this really, I want to say a word, but I'm not going to curse here. This really cool woman made all of these films about really taboo subjects, and mostly, with the exception of this one, actually, centering women in these stories. And I was so excited. And I watched this with her Twilight Zone episode. I think that was the double feature. Watched The Bigamist, Trouble with Angels, which is so cute and underrated, I think. But basically, I love her now, and I ordered a t-shirt from Tees on Scent, actually, that says directed by Ida Lupino. So watch out, I'll be wearing that one around the cinema once we can go to the cinema again. As far as this film, I really like it. I own it. But it's interesting to me how it's not, how noir it is. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, as we talked about on our Notorious episode, the definitions of what a noir are so arbitrary and nebulous that it almost feels like a fool's errand to define. But as I talked about on that episode, I think I agree with the fact that noirs are these post-World War II like post-war trauma movies, mm-hmm. where all of them in some way have to deal with like the weird surreality of America in a post-World War II landscape after, you know, winning a war and dropping a bomb and returning to like this forced conformity. And that is like my read on this movie, is that these are about three men who are, I don't think it's ever explicitly stated that they were, they're veterans, but it's highly implied to me that mm-hmm. they are in some way, in the fact that like they're trying to get away from their wives and their work in this like regimented lifestyle in order to go and just like have a good time. And then you have this third man who is probably also a war veteran, but like a lot of World War II veterans did not just like land back with like, you know, their families and things like that, like went mm-hmm. on a life of crime. I mean, it's based off of the real life exploits of a serial killer named Billy Cook that like Ida Lupino actually got the life rights to after talking to him, mm-hmm. Like when he was in prison. I think she also got the rights to the two men that this movie is based on.
Yeah, the Hays Code made her lessen the kills. There are not as many kills as there were in real life.
Yes, there's only like three kills in this movie. I don't remember.
Is counting?
The dog. Yes, I mean there is a dog does unfortunately get killed in this movie. I don't know. I mean, you have the couple. You don't see them get killed, but it's not a spoiler. These are literally opening moments of the movie. Like there's a couple who gets killed in the opening moments movie, which the opening moments of this movie are great because so everything's good. Done just with the music and sound, and also like the like titular hitchhiker is actually like, you don't see his face until like about 10 minutes into the movie,
mm-hmm.
Which is crazy for a 70 minute movie. But for me, the like noir elements, besides the fact that it's obviously like in black and white, it's claustrophobic because it's mostly mm-hmm. within a car.
Yeah.
And I think noir is like, usually it's the city that's claustrophobic in noir. Obviously they're like in the Southwest / in Mexico. So like, obviously the landscapes are like big and it's a lot of daytime and a lot of sun. But I think that the fact that these two men feel trapped mm-hmm. and are trapped with this killer, to me, is what builds that like claustrophobic intensity. Were there any like other noir elements in this that you, or I guess like, because we said we're not great at defining it, but was there anything that like stuck out to you as far as like the stylization of this movie?
Yeah, I mean, well, one, it's just like super bleak. And I never feel like noirs are like happy-go-luckies. But I did find like what you were saying about them being in the car versus out in the desert. But that, and also the like dark shadows of night contrasted with like the bright open sun during the day. I think it's interesting how she literally uses these opposites at different times throughout the movie, but they basically act in the same way.
For sure. Yeah, there's even this great part where William Talman, who plays Emmett Myers, the titular hitchhiker, at one point, like, is talking to them when they're camped out at night about, he asks one of them to give them his their watch, and he talks about, like,
I had a watch like this once when I was 17. Nobody gave it to me. I took it. Knocked off a broken down jewelry store in a little jerk town outside of Tulsa. It was a cinch. You guys are soft. You know what makes you that way? You're up to your necks in IOUs. You're suckers. You're scared to get out on your own. You always had it good, so you're soft. Well, not me. Nobody ever gave me anything. So I don't owe nobody. My folks were tough. When I was born, they took one look at this puss of mine and told me to get lost. Well, I didn't need them. I didn't need any of them. Got what I wanted my own way. You get the know-how and a few bucks in your pocket. You can buy anything or anybody. Especially if you got them at the point of a gun. That really scares him.
You ever been at the other end of a gun?
No. And I never will.
And he talks about, like, how he feels like he could have been these two men if he hadn't had this, like, incredibly difficult life growing up. And so, like, you do get that, like, I feel like these two men and this one man, like, kind of see each other in each other. And also, I feel like my biggest take on this movie, and this is obviously just, like, post-Trump, like, trauma, post, like, alt-right trauma and things, probably speaking. But for me, this is a movie about someone who defines themselves as an individual who claims that, like, they have been screwed over so much and they've had this, like, incredibly difficult life and everyone else is suckers for, like, being a sheep and, like, going along with things, and they're a free thinker for themselves and that they can do everything on their own and that they're free, but at the same time they are holding everyone else hostage and they are not self-sufficient and they are essentially, like, ruining these people's lives. And, like, that is how I feel like America is at this point, where it's, you have a bunch of people who are saying that they are, I don't listen to what other people say, like, I just do my own thing, and, like, I do it at the expense of anyone else. But the reality is, it's like, if you couldn't exploit other people, then you would have nothing, which is, that's, like, my biggest read on this movie, watching it this time.
Yeah.
Did you walk away with this? Like, this is, I don't know, this is my second time seeing this movie. Did you walk away with anything different watching it?
Now that you say that, that makes sense, and I see everything in the movie that what you're saying. I think one of the biggest things that I notice in this film is, like, the dudes being friends. This is her only film without women in it. Really, the only woman is an actual little girl child in the movie. So it's all just men, and, like, they got the macho men, they're being muscular, and, like, they got guns. But, like, realistically, it was two against one. One of these guys probably could have gotten away if they had sacrificed the other, but it's, like, their, like, determination and their friendship to stay together because they're just cute little bros. And yes, so that's kind of, it's like a little more optimistic about friendship, I guess.
Well, you do touch on something that I brought up, which is the fact that he points out, Emmett Myers points out to them that at any point, if they could have gotten away, if they had chosen to be more selfish about their given situation, like, he at one point, he points that out to them. And you also touch on something else that I find super interesting about the movie. Despite the lack of women in the movie, like, she is kind of like a lot like my beloved Catherine Bigelow in her early career. Like, she is examining masculinity in her own way. Like, she is, like, talking, like, there are these two men who have, like, lied to their wives, who are like, I just want to go have a good time. But there are, like, all these little subtle things, like, they are in Mexico, and, like, at one point people do come up to them and solicit them for, like, a good time with, like, drinks and women. And you would think, oh, well, we're just going to go have a good time. But one of them pretends to be asleep to avoid temptation. It's great.
And then the other guy's just like, well, my buddy's asleep, so I can't go do that.
Yeah, exactly. It's great. And you talk about the fact that, like, they're trying to be macho, but it's completely deflated when you see this guy with this gun come in, who is, like, clearly in control of the situation. Now, would he be in control of the situation if he didn't have a gun? No. And obviously, like, guns are usually typical, like, symbolic of phalluses in movies, at least. This is usually read in film and literature. And at the end of the day, like, he's just as, like, powerless as they are. And a lot like other noir elements that we've touched upon, this movie has no hero. Neither of the men end up being heroes at the end of it. I mean, they try their best to subvert his actions, but at the end of the day, they essentially don't triumph by any sort of, like, anything they did during the movie trying to subvert their his actions by like sabotaging the radio and doing other things. Like, it's essentially just like the police have gotten clues and they are on the trail of this killer. Like, they're not heroes at the end of it.
Yeah.
Which I find super interesting.
Yeah. Something else I find interesting is the lack of subtitles when Spanish is being spoken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you think of that?
It's interesting. I mean, I think I don't know how intentional it is at mm-hmm. the time, because obviously things have changed. I mean, one of the biggest plot points in the movie is that he doesn't want the one person who can speak Spanish to speak it because he can't understand it. So he doesn't know if they're trying to undermine him at any point. And I'd be curious if anybody who speaks Spanish listening to this movie, if there are any like little Easter eggs where when they are speaking Spanish very briefly, if he is alluding to things or if we should just take it at face value.
I think he's just saying what. Because I have a little bit of, I in no way am fluent in Spanish, but based on what I could gather, please correct me if I'm wrong, anyone, he's just straight up being like, yes, where is this ferry to take me to this place? He's not even trying to be like, hey, someone, this guy's got a gun, or like something, like trying to trick him.
Which part of the tension of the movie is like wondering if they are going to get away doing that at any point.
Mm-hmm.
They do a couple of things, like he leaves the wedding ring or the ring,
mm-hmm.
And then they do like cut the wires to like the radio. He really does have them like trapped mm-hmm. for the most part. I did appreciate the fact that like there are no Mexican stereotypes in this movie.
Yeah.
that was nice. They were just regular people, which is nice when you watch an old movie. Yeah, I think this movie is quite incredible. Like, it is one of the more stressful pieces of cinema I've sat through. Like, I'd seen this movie before, but like you feel the frustration these two characters have of being like, I don't want to be in this situation. I am trapped here and there's almost nothing I can do about it
mm-hmm.
without like endangering my own life or my friend's life. And that's a hard skill to have as a filmmaker. So do you have any final thoughts on Ida Lupino in the movie The Hitchhiker?
So like, obviously we see like movies kind of like this afterwards, like The Hitcher or like California with a K, like things where people are being held hostage in cars by other people, sometimes hitchhikers. And I was thinking a lot because is his name Roy? Which one is Roy? Roy's the one that gets hurt, right?
Yes.
I was thinking how much he reminded me, just like the actor's face reminded me of Jason Sudeikis. So then I was like thinking about like, oh, who would play these people if they remade this movie? Don't remake this movie. But if this were being made today, I figured that Bill Sarsgaard would be the hitchhiker.
Yeah. I mean, that to me is a great choice. Are we talking about casting this movie today?
Yeah. So
I mean,
who would you really cast?
There aren't really a lot of characters. I mean, there's really only three characters. There's some tertiary characters.
Yeah. Who would you cast as the other guy who I didn't? What's his name?
Oh man,
I already forget his name.
I mean, if I'm just gonna build off of what you said,
mm-hmm.
You said Bill Skarsgård as Roy,
as the hitchhiker.
Oh, as the hitchhiker.
Yeah,
oh,
and
I'm
then
sorry.
Like Jason Sudeikis kind of looks like the other guy.
Gotcha. Yes,
but you don't have to cast him in that role.
Oh, I mean, I don't know who would play. I think his name is Gilbert.
Two bros.
I mean, Jason Sudeikis. Can we? It'd be really funny just to cast two comedy people in a serious movie, but how about, just because it'd be funny to have two comedy people be in like a very like tense like noir film, I would probably cast Will Forte.
I think
because on that show Last Man on Earth, Jason Sudeikis plays Will Forte's brother at one point.
Cute.
But my final thoughts on The Hitchhiker are simply is that it's cool that I've watched the movie twice in as many years, and I have like pulled something completely different from it each time. I think this would make a great double feature as far as like movies that kind of revel in like the existential nightmare of mm-hmm. like the road. I think a great double feature would be another movie that's in the public domain made around the same time. Detour, which we also screened at the IU Cinema. Also another under like 60, like somewhere between 60 and 70 minute, like tight noir, so like I would highly recommend you watch those two films together. And as Elizabeth mentioned, check out the You Must Remember This episode on Howard Hughes and Ida Lupino. And just check out her films. I think Kino Lorber put out a whole box set of like every movie she directed, or at least the ones she made between like 1949 and like the 60s at her independent film studio, The Filmmakers.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you can watch the movie for free. As I did say, this movie is in the public domain, so like you can pretty much watch it for free anywhere.
But ours will look the best.
Yes, you should watch it with the IU Cinema. And with that, you can find me on Twitter at Samurai Flicks, on Letterboxd and Instagram at Robert Dolphy. Elizabeth?
Find me Instagram, Letterboxd, Twitter at my name, Elizabeth Roell, R-O-E-L-L. I realize it's been a long time since I've spelled that.
Yes. And with that, we're going to take you to, I'm going to end this episode in a very particular way. We're going to take you to our very special correspondent out in the field in Salt Lake City, Utah, for the Sundance Film Festival. Also, she could possibly just be in her living room, Brittany Friesner. And she's going to talk about opening night at the Sundance Film Festival. But after that, we just like to say this has been A Place for Film. We'll see you at the movies. Good night.
Good night.
Well, at the time of recording, I have just watched my fourth feature film of the Sundance Film Festival 2021 virtual edition, Rita Moreno, Just a Girl Who Decided to Go For It. And I haven't had to wait in a single standby line or trounce through the snow one bit to see these films this year, which is, of course, a different experience. While I enjoy it somewhat, being able to watch Sundance features in my pajamas, definitely miss being in Park City with all my Sundance friends and just being around the electric energy of the festival. Last night's day one opening festivities with a welcome by the festival's new director, Tabitha Jackson, was, again, a very different experience, but still lovely. They had a chat feature where folks from all around the world who were tuning in could chime in and say where they were joining from. So I wouldn't be surprised if maybe even more people were able to be engaged in day one of the festival this year, because those are always hot tickets to get. Stayed up late to watch One for the Road as my first Sundance film, and then even later to watch my first Sundance midnight movie of the year, Censor. Both were amazing. Day two of the festival. So far, I've been on a documentary binge. Before the Rita Moreno documentary, I tuned in for President, which was a documentary about the 2018 elections in Zimbabwe, which were a little too close for comfort, reminiscent of a certain U.S. election that we're all still recovering from. But yeah, very much looking forward to seeing maybe even double the films I can usually fit in at a normal Sundance. Although, again, missing the environment and the electricity of being around so many film fans and getting to see and experience some of these films in a packed house. Definitely would have loved to have been in a full Egyptian theater at midnight last night, experiencing some of those jump scares during Censor. But yeah, different but still amazing, I guess, is my short review of this year's Sundance 2021 Virtual Film Festival so far, and looking forward to many more good films over the weekend. See y'all later.
Passed all important resolutions by near unanimous consent.